Do we want to stick to a program so you haven't got time to edit?
Yeah, okay.
So you have the program there, don't you? The running sheet?
Oh.
The run sheet.
I have
it literally is
literally the back of an envelope.
No, that's the front of an envelope.
Oh, it's both sides, actually.
It? Yeah.
So it's a packed program this evening. I just noticed this is the first podcast we've done since August last year, which probably means we recorded it in July last year, so it's probably the first... Well, it's the second recording we've done since then.
If we do another one next year, we could make it an annual podcast.
I reckon we could just about manage that.
Yeah. Well, it better be good then, there's no pressure.
Yeah, as long as we get this one edited by the end of 2012.
There's every possibility of that, I reckon. Better than 50-50, at least.
Excellent.
At least.
We
could
do this then.
Okay. So, we don't need to catch up totally on everything that's been happening, because it's been a hive of activity here in Sawtell and in other lesser places around the world. I suppose we should...
An emotional roller coaster, and financial, and...
Actually, before we go on, we should just all introduce ourselves, I think.
Okay.
We don't do that normally.
No,
and
we don't.
I was listening to a podcast the other day, and I thought, no one listen to this, who are these burbling old twats who we don't know who they are?
So, and then they say their name, and you go, I still don't know who these burbling old twats are.
My name is Daniel Craig. This is Barbara Flynn.
We did that in the last episode,
sorry.
You might not remember because we were drunk.
I'm the infamous Reuben Hillier.
Also known as Tregeagle of the internet.
With the Tregeaglets.
Father of the Tregeaglets.
Yeah. And you are?
I'm MJD on the internet, and Matthew Davidson elsewhere.
And we have a guest tonight.
Local filmmaker and general skiver, David Folks, who introduced himself as well.
Gentleman of leisure and leading pillar in the gigantic edifice.
Saltywood.
That is Saltywood.
The leading pillar,
That is just about to be yanked out.
You're the pillar.
There's supposed to be four. I think there might be one and a half or two.
Well, there's two.
Two and a half.
That I know of.
And I'm not saying that I'm one of the full pillars.
Well, part of the reason that we got Dave in a mere two episodes and more or less 12 months since his last appearance was that he might not be with us for too much longer, in the sense of he will be with us still, but on the other side of the world, because he has decided that the glitz and the glamour of Saltywood is too much for him.
He'll be back before you know it.
Everyone burns out eventually in Saltywood. You can't
It's a high pressure environment.
Yeah.
You can't just...
You're going back to relax in the UK.
Take in the salt air and the sea breezes.
Yeah, I mean, every now and then you have to, forego the...
And recharge
the lure of commerce and...
That wine went down the wrong way, which was in my mouth.
It does say on the bottle that it's best enjoyed via a feeding tube.
Explains it.
But,
my theory is to move back to the UK just when everyone thinks it could possibly get any worse. And the theory is that, it's a really, really poor theory. But... that and Aussie dollars
because you'll definitely get a job
and we might not have to spend that last 3% that we would have spent otherwise on the house or something. Well, we're 3% ahead in our whole lives, which is worth going back to 10 years of misery for. We thought it's little things.
Strange reasoning you've got.
Strange
there,
reason.
That's okay. Yeah,
it's not really the reason.
We'll save a space on the beach for you when you want to come back. Don't worry.
So yeah. Well, it's not anything at all to do with the weather, obviously. But
you have been missing the seasons, rains.
No. The one season that I have here fits all. It's pretty good. But no, we're going back for family and opportunity reasons. Fiona's applying for work there, for all the charity companies are all there.
I imagine there's a lot of NGOs over there now because it's a third world country.
And there are Amsterdam, yeah. So that's the that's one of the attractions. And for me, and I've applied for an internship.
Oh, well, good luck with that.
Yeah.
So we're going to move on to this evening's subject that we were just discussing, on the way to the bottle shop, or have we got anything else you want to cover first?
No, tonight we're just talking about on the way to the bottle shop.
Yeah, well, in the rarely observed tradition of covering Sawtell news first, what has been going on in Sawtell of note? I do feel obliged to observe that since our last podcast, something has happened in Sawtell.
It has been a year, hasn't it? They had Christmas.
Something's happened in
they have that elsewhere
in the last 6 months, which has completely changed my lifestyle.
Oh, Sarong Bar.
Yes. We now have.
I have seen you outside Sarong Bar.
Yeah.
On at least one occasion.
Yeah. We now have our own bona fide bohemian little barlet.
By bohemian, you mean it's a place to drink that does not have pokey machines.
Yes.
Or televisions showing dog racing. Yeah.
Yes. And it's.
They say hi, Norm, when you walk in yet, or they haven't got. It's not that friendly yet.
They are rather friendly, which I mean for me is a bit intimidating because you know I like to be ignored when I'm, especially if I'm. Liable to embarrass myself with drunken ramblings, which I like to reserve.
You live in Australia, you can't be ignored. No one does that. Everyone has to know your life and tell you theirs. You haven't noticed.
That's what we're doing tonight.
Yeah.
We've just got a wider audience.
What? Yeah, of three.
Three. Yeah. plus Cameron.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is information that he's given me. I'm not making it up.
Basically, our audience consists of the people we've had on the program. Plus,
what do you mean? I don't listen to it. I can't get it to work. Not because I don't want to. But.
That's because Matthew insists on distributing it in the most difficult, obtuse format possible.
It's the easiest format possible.
He plays it under this rock somewhere called Sawtell.org.
It is really hard to actually find. Even when you gave me the link, I was still struggling.
No, that's too easy using a link.
You can't do that. It was a link to something that...
You have encrypted it, haven't you, Matthew?
I've done
the password.
For people trying to access it on their iPhones, I've done the next best thing and done it on a non-DRM'd, non-patented audio codec. So, yeah, probably Apple doesn't
recognise that.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyway...
Sarong
Bar. I mean, I despite the friendliness, I've got to say I normally appreciate Surly service, but I'll make an exception this time. And I have been impressed with the fact that the proprietor and staff all seem very keen to... They seem motivated by the desire to create a nice place for people to come and sit and...
It is a nice, friendly, convivial atmosphere in there.
Yeah, which I think is rather nice compared to the usual Australian drinking out experience, which is, if you're not here to throw money down a poker machine, get the hell out, you're wasting our space. Mm-hmm. Heaven forbid. Yeah, and the fact that they have a very reasonably priced happy hour, which serves locally brewed beer.
Excellent beer.
It's absolutely fantastic. And good for them.
And they're paying for this podcast, apparently.
No. But that's an idea.
Magnetic tape we've got going.
We could just talk about Sarong Bar all night, and we'd get like at least a free bottle of wine.
This is our sponsor.
Yeah, yeah.
We need to go talk to Tim about that.
We will. We'll enter into negotiations with just let him know that we can deliver his huge audience to him on a plate. Bring our incredible influence to bear.
Let me see it out.
So, apart from that, nothing else has happened in Sawtell.
No, you're right. Nothing's happened in Sawtell. Quite right. Which is the way we like it.
Yeah. So, no kidding.
Well, the New Year parade was bigger than ever. I think there was at least 5 floats, and only 4 of them were corporate sponsors. So
there was a float that wasn't a corporate sponsor.
Yeah.
Was that you in a tube?
Yeah. I ran out in front with my iPhone. And everyone thought I was afloat.
It's a shame because I had actually intended, and another deadline has gone swishing past, but I had intended to have a float where my friend Max, the 52-year-old drinking friend of mine who just had his birthday recently, who's very good at welding, he was going to help me weld a bunch of bicycles with gigantic hoops over them. So all right. When you put the front brake on, they do a roly-poly. And I was going to rig up some electronics. They flashed lights and played noises when you did the roly-poly as well. And I thought we'd have a float of maybe 2 or 3 of them, and we could race
100
around.
Of them. I mean,
well, better, just, yeah, 100 would be perfect. Well, but
3? You need to be ambitious. I mean, that's brilliant. I've never heard of anything. That's great.
Yeah. Well,
that's for next year then.
Well, it was going to be for last year as well.
But, right.
When I'm the same age as Max, maybe I'll finally get around to it.
Hmm.
Yeah. But they went with afterwards. We went with the kids up to the fair, and I realised that I'd been at the same fair 3 years ago, but in a blur of revelry and New Year kind of disenchantment.
The world famous Sawtelle Fun Day.
Yeah. And it was fun.
For the kids. Fun. Yeah.
But it just struck me that, I mean, maybe I just hadn't thought about it, but because you see the odd new ride from time to time, but for everything else, I mean, all of the paraphernalia that goes with any fair, I'm sure this is worldwide, it's pretty much been the same stuff since 1960. Mm. It's amazing. You eat the same stuff, like the sausage that's been deep fried,
the dead dog.
Obviously the fairy floss. Let's not the fairy floss. You can't really improve that, I admit.
No. It's sugar.
That's fine. But but everything else, even those little alien, the alien bottles of raspberry juice, and they're an alien, and you suck the... They've been around. I remember, in 1978 or something like that, at the Easter show in Auckland, they had them. And Auckland was already 30 years behind everything else. So
it still is.
It's probably further behind. I'm astounded that no one's kind of gone, hang on a minute, because we demand the most up-to-date possible everything else everywhere else, but when you go to the carnies, no way, any old crap
tried
will
and
do.
Tested.
Tried and tested.
Tried and tested.
There will never be.
They've got some Oompa Loompas working for them somewhere in a factory in Auckland, probably.
In 1,000 years, will be civilizations and Alpha Centauri will still have carnies with the same fairy floss and the deep-fried sausage.
And the same rides that are held together with duct tape. About to blow a gasket when you're on the whizzing around of it.
None of those rides, though.
Really, I'd never put my children on that one. No. Oh, no, they are on that one. It's not that.
Yeah, none of those rides are quite as bad as the clanking medieval torture machine that they have at the chili festival in the middle of the year.
That's a fantastic machine, that one. It's clockwork,
terrifying.
Isn't it? They wind it or something.
It's
chains. I like the chains.
I just can't see.
They're not for effect.
They hold it together. It's like a sadomasochistic children's torture device, and kids love it.
This sounds like it'll fall apart. It's so clever.
I know, and they have these big safety barriers because if you actually go stand too close to it, you'll have it get smacked around the head by a kid flying past. Yeah, they're pretty good, those ones.
Don't come near. You'll injure yourself. But put your children in there.
Exactly. Put your kids on board. They'll be all right. The best kind of ride. I remember we had the old witch's hat in the play park when I was a kid, and what it was a giant metal pole going straight up, and then kind of wigwam affair of metal poles hanging off a cap on top of it, and then like a bench around the outside, and you'll stand on the bench or sit on the bench and you spin it around and around like a roundabout, and you also bang it in and out, and that's pretty good fun. But we used to get pretty violent on that as kids, and I remember quite regularly making it wobble so much that it would actually fly right off the top of the big metal pole and land on the ground, breaking several ankles in the process. Or another one was you climb to the top and you put your hand under the lip of the thing if you were particularly stupid, and quite a few kids were, and then it would come down and grind your fingers into pulp and add a bit of extra lubrication to the whole thing. So It was a great device, that one. Yeah, I think we could probably have a compendium of fabulous medieval fairground rides, you know, slash torture chamber.
Slash torture chamber. Hard to tell the difference.
Yeah, I mean, that Iron Maiden probably started off as a fairground ride.
The paint job is normally anything that's different between what was in medieval times.
I know, and the screaming. And like the Dodgems, they have the screaming. So what's with the screaming?
On a speaker?
Yeah, on the speaker.
Oh, really?
Haven't you ever been to the fun fair? They play this screaming noise.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. It's
no, I just thought those people yelling, maybe.
No. Well, there's people yelling because they get scared by all the screaming that's going on. They play that sort of, it's like a klaxon kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like a high, I can't believe you haven't noticed that.
Maybe I just switched that bit out. I don't know. Yeah. But,
that's the future for you.
That is. The future of carnies is just carnies.
Which brings us to the subject of the evening.
Yeah. Yeah, nice segue.
Thank you. So yeah, we're going to discuss
technology.
How technology is going to fix everything.
Well, how it was going to fix
everything. Was going to fix everything. And it turned out to be crap. Well, the future turned out to be crap. Compared to... we quite like the now. It seems okay. But compared to what it was supposed to be like, it's turned out to be, a bit of a disappointment. If you're, fan.
These chairs don't hover for a start.
They don't.
They barely stand upright.
Yeah.
They don't last very long.
I mean, robots were supposed to be, by now, looking after everything, pretty much.
And we're not all wearing skin-tight Lycra outfits.
So there's some good things.
Looking good.
There's some good things. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that was a Seinfeld gag, wasn't it? Like, yeah, we're supposed to... At some point in the future, everyone starts wearing the same stuff. Because, you know, we're going to be visiting other planets and we need to look like a team or something like that. And I think that's... I think that's true. I think there was some fetish with Lycra and everyone wearing the same stuff. So that's... We got rid of that. That's fine.
That's just cheaper for television space operators to afford the costumes, really, isn't it?
I think, yeah, it was just the wardrobe staff going, for God's sake, it's too complex. Can we just go with the sash and the one piece?
The lapel pin. The captain? He's the admiral.
They just had someone French in the art department. No, it's not good. You must have the sash and the one piece, and that's the lepo. That's this season. It's so good. So there's that was good. We got rid of that, but you know, anti-gravity. We don't have that. I mean, we don't have Bones in Star Trek could do the tricorder thing. You know, you just go, you've got cancer.
See, this is the thing, technology is always promising these things to us. I remember shortly before I left England to come here, 15, 16, 17 years ago now, there was a big thing in the news, and it was a breathalyzer. You blow into it, and this machine sniffs your breath and says, my God, you've got halitosis. But I think it also worked out whether you had cancer and whether you had a common cold or whether you had a sore leg. You know, it was supposedly this tricorder, you know, but you had to blow into it. And they said, we've got the technology sussed out. We've got it sorted. We just need to start mass producing them. And I thought, well, that's a bit of a breakthrough. That's pretty interesting. We go to Australia and England's discovered this fabulous new device and it's going to revolutionise, you know, medicine.
Yeah.
I never heard about that ever again. I mean, actually, occasionally I've heard a news item about some device, you know, but it's always a bit muttering around the edge. And medicine's a big thing. I mean, they do this with the NBN, you know. It's like a thing they use to sell something else. I think there's devious shenanigans going on there to try and...
I noticed that as well with the NBN. It was all about, suddenly, all patients are going to have, you know, auto doctor, you know, in front of their screen at home. And I was like, why flog that? Like, most of the people that would need it don't even use the internet. So they're selling it to the rest of us who think, oh, thank God there's another reason why we need it.
But yeah, I mean, it's kind of like trying to second guess why faster internet would be useful to somebody, and you know, I'm resisting the temptation to go into my tirade about the NBN and what's
a solution looking for a problem.
But the thing is, you know, I've got no problem with the idea of faster internet access. So fine, that's great. But the one of the changes in the way the world works in the last, you know, quarter of a century or so is the way that you justify any kind of public expenditure. And you've got to be able to pass a cost-benefit analysis, basically. So you've got to come up with some, you know, politically sellable, totally uncontroversial use for the infrastructure before you put it in. And it's no good saying, well, we don't know what people will use it for. That's part of, you know, what it's all about. We just, you know, put the infrastructure in and people will make use of it however they wish, and they'll come up with all sorts of unexpected and wonderful things. You can't get that past, you know, the ideological filters of, you know, where's the money in it?
Yeah. And I suppose that's why it's this modern thing about you've got to sell public money now, which you didn't used to do, you just build it. I mean, when they built the railway, they didn't go, now you'll be able to, you know, they didn't market it. They just went and built it. I mean, right, just build the damn thing because we know we'll use it.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that true?
I mean, the suburb...
There was no way to mass market it.
The suburb that my parents moved to in the 60s, way, way on the outskirts of Sydney, and people were saying, you're mad, why would anyone live that far out? It's practically the country. And, of course, it's, you know, considered, you know, fairly easy commute now compared to, you know, some of the more far-flung places. But they had a railway station put in before anybody lived there. And there's no way you could get that done now. You'd have to be able to say, okay, we can sell this amount of tickets, get this much money back. There's no, if you build it, then they'll come sort of mentality.
Yeah, oh, that's great. You're talking about even more recent. I'm talking about when they planned the original European and American railways. Well, they just went...
I suppose things worked much slower then. I mean, the NBN is coming out how soon after the internet was invented? I mean, it's you know, it kind of became, well,
okay, half a century.
Not invented, but became popular in, you know, what, 1995?
Al Gore was invented only 10 years ago or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All kinds of people invented it, but you know, 95. I mean, and whereas the railways, they got invented and were being used for a long time, you know, before they... So they were kind of tried and tested. So when countries like Australia were whacking them in, then they knew that they were something that would work.
I suppose the thing is there.
You can see exactly what the railways do. It's like I could walk 20 miles, or I could ride a horse 20 miles, or I could pull my wagon 20 miles, and it's going to be long and slow and dusty and bumpy. Mm. Or I can get on a train and read a book, you know, and. So it's very, very easily measurable, and there's a really good practical benefit. You know, I can move my goods from one end of the country to the other, you know, without paying a bunch of wagoneers to tow it all, you know, or put it on a boat, or, you know, it's very plain, simple, and practical to see what a railway can do.
Isn't it? Is it sort of and like transposing that kind of the mentality of knowing what you needed to get done, which was then was just to make things move faster or have an easy way of getting from A to B. Like, you know, a modern day sensibility would be, we know that we need to get some things downloaded quicker, or we need them, you know, unlimited bandwidth for a start, which don't have in Australia very easily or without great cost. Those things seem just as obvious. So I suppose I'm wondering why the hard sell, which comes back to the selling it for the fact that, you know, all our people in need of medical attention will get it in high definition.
But I mean, that's the sell that's being pushed to us, the plebs.
Yeah. Well, they're hardly going to say, look, you're going to get unlimited high definition porn.
I think
I mean, it's not.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
really going to sell.
I
sorry.
Well, a very niche market. Only 50-60%.
I think it's a wonderful. The NBN, as it turned out, is a wonderful compromise solution that satisfies no one. But okay. I think it's basically being sold to large telcos as this is something we're going to provide you, and you will eventually flog it off to you at a bargain basement price, and you won't have had to make the investment. This is totally risk-free, the taxpayer's paying for it, and you know, a few years down the track when we privatise it, as we ideologically must, you will get it at rock bottom price, and you won't have had to take any risk whatsoever. So I think that's the way it's being sold to the people who matter, to the plebs. We're spun the stories about, you know, distance education, distance medicine, distance this, that and the other.
But really it's just another... Well, in theory, and I know this has been the trend for the last 20 years, is to do exactly what you're saying. Finance an enormous new venture at public cost, and then it's private profit. But, I mean, highways, railways, another big infrastructure, and I wonder if this is in this category. We're not. I mean, the highways were not handed over apart from a couple of select little roads which were built, purpose-built for tolls in Sydney and so on. So, you know, it would seem some optimism that it still may end up a nationally owned piece of infrastructure.
I don't know. It's odd. I suppose to get away from specifics and back to the grand theme,
yeah.
I spent much of the holidays rereading some old Doctor Who novelisations.
They made the Doctor Who and then they novelised them?
Is it back in the old days, that's how it worked, because there's no home video, no VHS, much less DVD. So if you wanted to relive the show you just watched, you went to the bookshop and got the novelisation. They don't do that anymore for obvious reasons,
because
you know,
in the future.
We live in the future, and you can carry TV shows around on a piece of plastic.
Mobile phone.
I mean, some things are good, yeah. So I should.
Yeah. So, but it was interesting reading, you know, a story written in the early 70s, and their vision of the future was that we'd be doing all these grand projects. So, in the Silurians from 1971. Or 1970, I think. The vision of the future. The vision of the future.
Someone out there might, to get these things right.
They
might go, hang on a minute. He doesn't know what he's talking about.
Yes.
He actually said 1971, but he knew it was 1972. But he's hoping to get an email from someone correcting him.
It was 1970. So anyway. in this story, there was basically an underground research facility called the cyclotron, where they had this big thing whizzing atoms around, subatomic particles around and around and around, in the hope that they'd find a cheap new source of energy as well as, you know, scientific discoveries.
That's where they got the idea.
And that's where they got the idea for the Large Hadron Collider,
because
obviously.
Imagine selling that to... the European Union. Been reading Doctor Who, and it was a great idea.
Well, you start the thing with by showing them the episode first, with the tinfoil.
But the vision, the understanding of how these projects would be run in those days was that it would be all stuffy old men in suits and bowler hats from Whitehall who were running the thing as a government enterprise, as a national project taken on at public expense for the public benefit and blah, 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 blah. And you just don't get... I mean, in 1970, that was a vision of the future that looked plausible. But you just don't get that now.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder seriously if you would ever get something like the Large Hadron Collider funded ever again. I mean, I just can't see it. I can't see someone going like this. Because it's, a couple of billion...
I don't really know how they ever managed to get funding for it in the first place.
I remember the money being, just stupid, like a figure that...
Yeah, that's the thing. It's an incredible amount of money. And I'm kind of amazed. But I suppose it's lots of countries have chucked bits in, haven't they?
Is that why they put it around lots of borders, so everyone owns a bit?
Probably, yeah.
It seems a bit odd.
There's a border control for the...
These atoms, hold on.
Yeah, I don't care if you're a Higgs boson. Just
give us your paper, thank you.
What do you mean you're in a hurry?
Yes.
What are you, a beam of light?
Sorry, speed of light may be okay in Germany, but not here.
Blow hard and blow cold, play fast and loose, take it to head.
There's loads in the press. This is completely unrelated, so I don't know where this is going, but loads in the press seems to be slanted along the lines of the Europeans can't really do anything now because they let Greece run up a big tab.
Well, I mean,
right? But then you see something like CERN, you go, well, hang on a minute. You know,
they could just shut down CERN and might save themselves a few million.
They can sell that to someone who can afford it. I don't know who could.
I'd buy it and I could ride my moped round and round. It'd be great, you know. Imagine the things you could do there.
Yeah, you could probably, if you get up to like at least 90 with a sort of southwester up your freckle, you'd probably get up side like that. On the
we
side.
Could all buy a house on, you know, on the CERN, you know, circuit, and we'd have the fastest broadband connection in the whole world. Except there'd be a few interruptions when they started colliding with each other, I suppose, a bit of network, you know.
It'd be like, sort of like, maybe in the future though, it'll be like, you know, the hounds. You go and you put money on your atom and they sit off a Higgs boson and then all these other atoms go and chase it.
They'll be televising it in all the pubs in Australia. Watching these Higgs bosons collide.
Did you see it? No, not this time.
I blinked, missed it.
It was a photo finish.
That's the future. I mean, that's...
Yeah, it's future's now. You're supposed to not bet against the future. You know, it's going to get better. It always apparently does. I mean, within reason.
I think that idea has largely vanished. That expectation that things are going to get better in some sort of genuinely aspirational way. Like, you know, I've always found it very annoying because I'm a grumpy old man whenever Tony Blair or Mark Latham in Australia would talk about aspirationals. And this idea that because people wanted a larger television set, that was sort of like the highest, you know, goal that human beings can set for themselves. And certainly, I don't think Tony Blair ever came crashing down the way that Mark Latham did. But Mark Latham, who was a prime ministerial contender at one stage, and he was, for a long time, the resident sort of intellectual dynamo of the Labour Party in Australia and championing the third way and all that sort of thing. He sort of came crashing down and realised that all these people that he was talking of as aspirational were actually really nasty, mean, grasping, thick-headed, ignorant, unlovable people.
Even Bogans are lovable. I mean, yeah, you can't just say that.
I think that sort of
too much like us.
I think that sort of Harold Steptoe or Tony Hancock sort of aspirational thing. I'm sorry, I've just been watching Steptoe and Son today, but that
I can't stay away too long from it.
That idea that you sort of yearn for a more cultured and civilized life and richer life,
yeah,
has kind of vanished and been replaced with the yearning for more stuff.
I wonder if it's just like a moment in time where we're sold that that's what we want. I think we're being sold a lot of stuff that
I was going to say there's a big it's not a mainstream drive yet, but there's a big drive of people who are appreciating that they've got too much stuff, especially around Christmas time. You know, everyone's been given all these things, and lots of people, you know, are saying, "Look, please don't buy me any presents. You know, I've got too many things already." You know, and I think.
Well, I'll take all that back then. In the sale, I just haven't got around to giving it to you guys yet.
Thanks.
Should be able to get cash back for it at Kmart.
But yeah, there's just we all just have been craving stuff for so many years, and now we can just keep buying things. You know, like televisions that would have cost $500 5 years ago are now $90 from you know the good guys. You can get yourself a flat screen gigantic TV, you know, for under $100. And
but that's that's just the way of all. Not just technology, but you know, it's products of, that come from scale of economics, you know, that's the way of all things. So that's not really, I suppose, anything other than proving that we can produce commodities at a cheaper and cheaper rate at a higher and higher standard. I mean, that proves one side of consumption, but the other one, which I presume you're getting at, is the desire for it in the first place, and how much stuff is required. Well, then you're saying maybe we reach a saturation point where this, you're saying not, but you're saying maybe we reach a saturation point where it's like, do you know what, I live at a level that is, it's fine, I don't need.
I think it's more that do you really need to upgrade your television that you bought 6 months ago for a one that does 3D, you know?
Oh, I see. Oh, right. Yeah. There's a lot made of that sort of consumption.
But you know, we're all being force-fed this stuff. You know, buy this new thing because it's the latest, greatest, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And you might kind of skip that. And shopping is a national duty. I don't think 3D is a big deal. I'll skip that. And so you skip it. And then another 6 months down the track, it's 4D. It's, you know, scratch and sniff or something. I don't know. But, you know, whatever the next thing is, you know. So... then can you resist that temptation as well, you know? And then another 6 months, and then it's just going to keep on going. There's always the push to make you buy something.
Yeah, well, yeah, definitely.
Whereas it always used to be, like my grandmother with her fridge that she had for 40 years.
Yeah.
You know, because you buy a fridge and it's built to last, you know, and I'm sounding like an old curmudgeon now, but...
Mm.
But you know, I just
yeah. find well, it a little I'd like bit to, scary. I'd like to think that there's still a market for built to last as certain products. I mean,
I think there is, and there's also the people selling those things know that, and there's a premium set on them, which is fair enough, you know. But even then, you know, there's some things you just cannot buy for built to last stuff. I mean, like mass produced electronics, because. They're mass produced, you know.
Well, if it's computing, then you're up against what Moore's law, where everyone still knowing that it's going to be completely outdated in 2 years.
Well,
hasn't stopped NASA using ancient technology to launch space shuttles and stuff. They don't use the latest.
No, but it's the computing is the.
Yeah, yeah.
Is what they're talking about. They'll replace the computing. I'm pretty sure they do.
Just so we can have three-dimensional paper clips telling us how to do this instead of two-dimensional paper clips telling us.
NASA up there, you know, they've got the 3D TV and they're. On a 1950s rocket.
That economy of scale you were talking about does expose some other problems too, which was very well illustrated to me last year when I had a monitor, one of these monitors, die on me, a computer monitor, and I was all set to toss it in the skip out the back and go back up to the mega mall. And Peter Van Schellebeck said, hey, give me a look at it. So we set to it with a butter knife, trying to prise the back off. It's obviously not designed to be user serviceable. And we scratched our heads and, you know, sort of tried to work things out. And then Peter went away and tried to think about it and did some research. And it turns out that there's a dodgy batch of capacitors, little electronic components worth about 10 cents, that they knew at the time they manufactured them, oh, this is a dodgy batch, but they sold them anyway. And these have found their way into a whole lot of, basically these LCD screens, which require a huge amount of power to get them going at startup, so they use these capacitors. And it's basically... you can crack open these screens when they die and you will see a bulge on the top of the capacitor indicating that it's blown. And, okay, you get your soldering iron, you go up to the electronics shop, spend 10 cents on a new capacitor, put it in, Bob's your uncle, it works again perfectly. And the problem is, if the monitors cost under $100 and if you're going to try and do this repair job, which is simple and cheap, you can't run a business and even think about doing a repair for less than $50. At which point the person who's getting the thing repaired says, well, bugger it, I'll get a new one.
Yeah.
This is why all the second-hand furniture stores are now closed.
Yeah, yeah. Certainly second-hand.
I don't think this is a problem with any kind of general laziness or anything. It's just simply that our system says to us, screams at us, the best way is to go and get a new one, because you're time poor and you're doing everyone a favour by buying this new product and all that stuff.
And I think the problem is that in the actual manufacture of these things, so many of the costs have been externalised.
Yeah.
So the $100 screen is actually worth a lot more than $100, because who's really paying for it? It's not just us. It's the slave labour overseas. It's the environmental cost of all the parts being thrown out and the thing being thrown out, you know, 5 or 10 years before its time, because yes, we can't be bothered replacing a component.
We're not paying for the cleanup. We're not paying for the cleanup of the resources being mined, or the oil for the plastic being spilt, you know.
So what I'm saying is I agree with all that. Your voluntary, and Pete's, you know, voluntary desire to work it out runs against the grain of the system. That doesn't mean that what you're doing is like wrong or the wrong approach, obviously. But you'd think that at some point we could either decide that the system's going to run out of resources and crash in a way that will force us to recycle better, like what you're doing. So it would become much more desirable, because the product suddenly does include all those externalities. But the other way is that probably what's going to happen anyway is those externalities are starting to be built in. I mean, very slowly, but they're being built in, whether it's a carbon tax or it's a business that's encouraged to recycle or whatever. I mean, so in theory, those costs are going to go up accordingly.
In theory, this is technology saving us again, isn't it? I mean, this is...
Well, that's not. That's a system.
Well, it's okay, so the future was all about us coming up with these great ways of doing things that were going to, you know, make the world work so much better. And part of the wonder of computers when they first came out was suddenly all your...
Paperless society.
All your filing cabinets could be chucked out.
Yeah.
You could all sit there on a hard drive.
Yeah.
And...
because officers don't have paper anymore.
And we can be, and everyone can be much more organised, because the computer can do all the organising for you, and you don't have to have like 75 people to organise the 75 people out in the field, because the 75 people out in the field can organise themselves all through computers, you know, and that has happened to some extent. But it's also not worked, because now that we can do more, we just try and pack more in or something. I don't know. What's gone wrong? I mean,
I don't know if it's wrong. I mean,
I'm probably as guilty of it as anybody, because...
you fixed that screen. That gives you, you know, kudos.
Well,
that kind of environmental credit, in fact.
As I think I said the last time we talked, you know, when I was a kid, I always wanted to be a writer, because I couldn't think of what else I was any good at. And that now I have the ability to write whatever the hell I want and make it available. Whether or not anybody wants it, that's another matter. But I don't have to convince a publisher that there's some money in it for them to make it available to anyone who wants it. I have the ability. There's nothing stopping me from pursuing my childhood dream. I just don't do it. And that's a bit embarrassing. I've got no excuse.
Well, no, because life comes along and there's other things that are just as worth doing. I don't know. It depends. It sounds like
I know what you mean, though. But I mean, as a child, there's these things you dream of having or being able to achieve one day, and you eventually, as you grow up, they become within your grasp, and it's suddenly not as important to you, you don't perceive it now as important to you as it was then,
or you realise that being an astronaut and being a Kiwi, those things aren't compatible. just forget it. You just scale it down, Dave. You're not going to be an astronaut.
We didn't have a choice. I remember the mathematics class I did when I was in primary school. We had to do a graph, and there was the question answer thing, and the question was, do you want to be a nurse or an astronaut? And what we were actually discovering there was that more girls want to be nurses than astronauts, and more boys want to be astronauts than nurses. And it turned out I was the only boy in the class who answered that I wanted to be a nurse. And I didn't actually want to be a nurse.
Wanted to be an astronaut, even less.
I didn't want to be either of them. I just thought,
aren't there more options?
Yes.
All there is going to be in the world is astronauts and nurses.
Well, that's the
It sounds like some kind of wet dream.
I'm sure there's a porn movie about that somewhere.
There's always a porn movie about it somewhere, yes. Unfortunately.
There's a porn movie about this podcast, actually.
Yeah. Okay, hopefully there's not one about that.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, that's a whole nother podcast.
Yeah, we'll discuss that another time.
If not, when will